For those of you continuing to keep score in the pew, that's another 13 loves, 8 commandments, and 3 abides, for a 2-week total of 40 loves, 9 commandments, and 17 abides. But who's counting? If you were hoping for a sermon on the details of the Levitical code, you're out of luck. For another week at least, with the continuation of the gospel passage about the vine and the branches, and our command to abide in God's love, it is all about L-O-V-E. And yet, I am always cautious about preaching about love, not because I don't believe in it or don't practice it. It's just that love is such an overused word that if we aren't very careful this morning, we could easily find ourselves talking past one another. So in order to find some common ground, let's begin with our gospel from John's 15th chapter and specifically the 9th verse. Because it is there that Jesus uses a very specific word about how we should be in this love. That word in Greek is meno, which the newly revised standard version translates as abide. Abide in my love. Abide in God's love. Unfortunately, the choice of this word abide doesn't carry the significance, the fullness of this Greek word meno. Here are a few other meanings of this word that might bring out the intent that the writer of John's gospel was recording. Remain, stay, live, dwell. Of these, the word that I'd like to work with this morning is the word dwell. As in dwell in my love, dwell in God's love. As in keep my commandments and you will dwell in my love. Because dwelling has a sense of being rooted, of connection, of relationship. In fact, one scholar has gone as far as to word it this way. I've loved you the way my Father has loved me. Make yourselves at home in my love. If you keep my commands, you'll remain intimately at home in my love. That's what I've done. Kept my Father's commands and made myself at home in his love. This wording strikes a deeper chord. There is a sense of closeness with this kind of dwelling, of being at home. It is not remote or held at a distance. It is lived in. To expand this metaphor of making oneself at home in this love, were this love a room in a house, abide might be the living room or the parlor, a space that is often formal, well put together, and rarely used. Now, to be sure, for some, this can be a comforting relationship with Jesus. But too often, this understanding can mean a relationship kept at a distance, and therefore somewhat removed from everyday life. This isn't what Jesus was talking about for living this kind of love. Because the intent of this word meno, again, has a more intimate feel to it. So if this kind of love were a room and a house, it would be more like a family room or the room with the kitchen table where meals are eaten, where everyone gathers around. For me, a prime example of this embodied love is seen in one of my favorite homes to spend time in, that of my mother and father-in-law. Now, at the outset, I must acknowledge how grateful I am just to be able to say that. Their home, just outside of Angel's Camp in Gold Country, has 2 doors. The front door, which only traveling salesmen and door-to-door evangelists use, and the door that everyone else uses, from the UPS truck driver to long-lost friends to ranchers from up the road. This second door leads into the room of their house wherein this dwelling, this living love, exists. There is a large oak table, a comfortable hearth, and an always fragrant kitchen. It is a space in which Jesus can be heard in name and seen in deed. It is where the Thanksgiving turkey for 20 plus is carved, where difficult life decisions are discussed, and where grandchildren are read aloud to. It is in this space that one can experience the kind of abiding love that Jesus is calling us to, this everyday, lived in, not always neat and tidy kind of love. The love that is messy when cleaning up from dinner and from picking up the pieces of broken dreams. It is a love of God that has a home no matter where the heart is. And given all this talk of house and home, it is clear to me why this gospel is recommended for use in our marriage rite in the Episcopal Church. Unfortunately, though, when you think of scripture at weddings, what comes to mind? 1 Corinthians 13. Well, that agrees completely with my undocumented research. That what people remember is 1 Corinthians 13, you know, love is patient, love is kind, the resounding gong and the clanging cymbal. Now, to be clear, this is not to knock Paul. Paul's writings are absolutely fundamental to the Christian faith, especially the writings that we now know he wrote. Thank you. Some of the other letters that the early church wrote in his voice, well, they need a good bit more reflection. But John Dominic Crossan was on the mark recently when he wrote In Search of Paul, a book about Paul's revolutionary understanding of Christianity that stood and stands over and against the dynamic of fear and of dominance that empires use for control. And yes, in its overall context, Paul's vision of love in 1 Corinthians calls us to this very radical notion of love. But the problem comes in the way that we have used it. We have so watered down this passage that its call of patience and kindness over and against control and power have been robbed of its strangeness. We have sentimentalized it into submission. Which is why this passage from John hopefully stands apart, not just because it may seem peculiar to reference the word marriage in the context of the word joy. No, it's because this sense of love that Jesus uses in his command gets closer to real relationship. That of mutual self-giving love. You know, a love that's not bound up in opposite genders or constitutional rewriting, but a love that's about being called into deeper, fuller relationship. A love that finds its form in sex, but is known in many other rooms of the home than just the bedroom. A love that knows itself in service to another, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish. There are other aspects of a love lived in a home, of course. It's not just the feasts and the laughter shared. Our homes show other profound ways to stay in this love. And it was in a weekday Eucharist this past week that this sense of laying down one's life for one's friends came into much sharper focus for me. The person that was opening the scriptures with me that day talked movingly about their experience of growing deeper in love, and that in that and through that, choosing to be with people in their suffering as well as in their joy. They came to know love as opening up to suffering, not being outside of suffering or loving in spite of suffering, but being wholly with another person in their suffering. And this is yet another space in the home. Because friends, sometimes if things go as hoped for, and this may sound strange, but if things do go as hoped for, people are loved as they are allowed to die in their home. This is part of the dwelling too. I know that I'm biased because of my wife's vocation as a hospice nurse. But I feel we do ourselves a disservice when we talk around this kind of self-giving love. Many here today have experienced this vulnerable, oftentimes trying, but deeply profound way of loving another being. A love found dwelling in a liminal space. It can be with a spouse or partner, a parent, a child, a friend, but anytime we care for someone at the end of their life by setting our own lives down alongside theirs for a time, we come closer to this sense of dwelling with God. This can be known in hospital, in nursing home, or in a person's home. Regardless, it is the holy space created when one person, related or not, lies alongside another to share with, to be with them. It is here that a word or two about burden must be said. Our passage from the first letter of John this morning talks about this commandment to love another and about it not being burdensome. And yet it is a great fear of many of us that in our dying days we will be just that, a burden upon those who love us. Let us take heart then for another look at what the words of John's gospel are saying are helpful. For what we are asked to do is to keep these commandments, not shoulder them as our personal burdens. The word translated keep in verse 10, terio, carries more the sense of holding dear rather than simple blind obedience. In a love relationship, this has the meaning of wanting to do what the other asks. Such obedience isn't a burden, but is a free and joyful response of love. And this was powerfully seen right here this past Maundy Thursday at our evening foot washing. One family had come forward to wash each other's feet at the close of the service. And it was in the care that a 7-year-old daughter gave her father that this holding dear was glimpsed. Now, the way she held her father's foot was awkward at first, for often we aren't ready to care for our parents at the start. But as she began to wash his feet, carefully, surely, there was a powerful image of the love that one day might come forward in a room of a house with a love that sees not burden, but the keeping, the holding dear of a commandment. So what will this mean on Wednesday? That's a question that preachers often ask themselves. It's all well and good to preach a sermon that challenges, reflects, and maybe even inspires. But if it doesn't make a difference on Wednesday, Several days later, in the midst of dinner preparations, of work deadlines, of relationship frustration, then what good is it? So friends, here's what I would like us to wonder about, to practice this week. If this command is a command to love, to dwell in God's love, where does it dwell in your life? What room is it in? Now, this room could be metaphoric, it could be literal, but the action that comes from this dwelling must be embodied. Dwelling in God's love is a lived relational experience. How do you practice this command to love another? When does it seem more of a burden? How do you keep it, hold it dear? Friends, this week, find a place where you live. This may be in an office, a classroom, in a gym, or it may be where you lay your head at night. But this week, find yourself at home in God's love. Live your life from that dwelling space, that others may choose to live it with you as well.